Cincinnati podcast. Junior here with Politics Extra, Insider, all things Cincinnati.
How you doing, son?
I'm doing good. What's going on? It's our third episode.
Thanks for all the great feedback. We're getting great feedback on this, and keep it coming. Keep your suggestions coming. We're having fun. I think it's taken, and
People are doing it. Make sure you subscribe. Tell your friends. It's on iTunes, on Google Play, wherever your preferred podcast platform is. Just search That So Cincinnati, or right on the Audio Boom player, which is in the stories on Cincinnati.com. You just go in there. Just there's a little subscribe button right there. You just click subscribe, and you can follow it. It's super easy. But look, we want to keep doing these for you, so let us know what you like, what you don't like, if you have ideas, things you want us to talk about, and spread the word, please, about our podcast. Hope you enjoyed last week. Loved having Derek Bauman on last week. If you want to go back and listen to that, you know, we've sort of have an idea for a template of what the podcast is going to go like, and sometimes you just got to – I like that we're going to be able to be flexible with it, because when you get a guy like that and he's unbelievable for a half hour, just let him go.
Yep.
And because it was a different week for everybody in the city, and I think we were able to sort of reflect that with what he was able to do. But we'll have Sherry Coolidge on with us later in this as our interview later in the podcast, because City Hall is insane. It's a constant state of insanity.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and a lot is happening there, particularly right now. Sherry's been all over, breaking a lot of stories.
I had to catch myself there on what word I was going to use.
Yeah, just you know, we don't want to ruffle feathers, right?
No,
wait.
Oh, I don't care about that.
No, we definitely want to ruffle feathers. That's kind of we're here for ruffling.
Got to be careful to censor myself there, because I could use some pretty strong language that wouldn't be appropriate for the podcast.
Use whatever language you want to use. I want you to feel like you're keeping it real. All right.
Well, I'm keeping it real with ridiculous, so.
Yeah, right. So we are going to dive into all the City Hall stuff later with Sherry. After that, we'll have our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. If you have That's So Cincinnati moments, by the way, please send them to us. Whatever you think is just so Cincinnati, please. We always want to hear from you. If you have one that you want us to share, we'll share them and give you a shout-out here on the pod.
Yeah, we have our special drum roll for that.
Yeah.
I'd also like to point out that this was a tremendous idea from our top dog, our leader, Burl Love, who said, That's So Cincinnati. Inside That's So Cincinnati, he suggested have your That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And so I think we're going to have some fun with this.
That's why he's got the big office in the corner with the view, Jason.
That's right. He's got a little bathroom in there too.
He does. Has he ever let
lots
you use
of bobbleheads?
Are you allowed to use it?
No. It's funny because it wasn't the editor's office for a while, and I used to go in there and use that restroom a lot. It was like a little meeting room.
Yeah. Now it's hallowed ground.
This is too TMI, so I'm not going to talk about.
I mean, we don't want to know what you were doing in that bathroom.
Sorry.
Let's get into. I wanted to talk about one thing. I thought you had a really interesting column late last week, and it was about. It was an offshoot off the local poverty numbers came out, and out of the 81 biggest cities in the United States, the biggest poverty rise in poverty. We were third.
Cincinnati
was third worst.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like 27% poverty rate.
It's 27.7. I'm reading from Mark Kernut's piece on this, which really was very thorough. Quote, the increase was the third highest among the nation's 81 largest cities, and that's 250,000 population or bigger. Here's what's really disturbing is that the city recorded one of the biggest poverty rate increases among America's largest cities since the recession. So we actually went up since the recession. You would think we were going down. And so I think what happens here is this, or what's really going on, is this telling another side of Cincinnati. These numbers do. We a lot of us are thinking about how many great things are going on in Cincinnati, and there are a lot of great things. The GE Tower at the banks, a lot of new jobs coming, the new parks,
all
the renaissance of downtown
bigger,
and over the Rhine. Streetcar not involved in that. But this tells us another story, and it's concerning. And so I...
Isn't this... This is... I mean, this is part of the issue that we have with the homeless camps, right? I mean, aren't those connected? I mean, where it was bringing that to the forefront? I think that was... This was kind of part of their message a little bit. It was like
somewhat, yes.
Forgotten. I mean, isn't there a connect? Isn't there a connection?
You can make a connection there, and certainly. And I actually had a business leader tell me the other day that when other business folks come to town, the people who you know, are looking to maybe bring jobs, they call them site selectors. You know, have made the comments before that for our size of city, that we have quite a prevalent or big homeless presence, I guess, in the core of our downtown. I think the bigger thing here is that this is showing that we got a long way to go, that we can't rest on our laurels. We can't rest on the fact that we've got all these cool, spiffy new things, that we as a society, or we as a city, have to really roll up our sleeves and get after this and address it. And so I thought about myself, and I don't want to make the call. It's not about me, but I feel like when you see an issue like this and you see numbers like this and you care so much about the place that we live in, I have to look at myself and say, what am I doing to help this? Am I part of the problem? Am I a part of the solution? And I just started thinking after it was a couple days before the numbers come out, an editor told me about it, and I just really thought a lot about, like, I'm not doing a whole lot.
What can we do? I mean, that is, and to me, you know, we're going to be about solutions here. We're not going to be just like complaining for the sake of complaining. My question is, when I see those numbers, is how do you change that? I mean, how do you legitimately change that to cycle for the better? And what are we doing wrong that's what's happening?
Well, I think you have to look. That's a really it's a tough, complex animal to answer.
For sure.
It's a tough answer, and that's why I kept thinking about that. And I said you have to look at yourself and what are you doing, because to me, fighting poverty, a complex generational issue like poverty that's so deep and cyclical and really yucky and just heartbreaking. It's incumbent upon, I believe, all of us who are not in poverty. It's incumbent upon us as individuals. It's incumbent upon, you know, the government to help out, churches, business community, economic development folks. I even think it's incumbent upon us as journalists to, you know, bring up the issue and ask questions about it and report on it and to try to bring awareness to it. So, but I first have to look at myself and I think, you know, what am I doing to build relationships to help people? Am I serving meals to the homeless? Am I out, you know, am I enabling somebody by giving them money on the street, or am I not giving them money and I'm instead giving money to the shelters? Sorry, I'm getting a little on a tangent here.
Yeah.
But it's certainly an issue that I'm passionate about. Am I helping to mentor a kid? And I looked around, I thought, man, I've given a few bucks to a homeless shelter in the past year. But I've really not done anything else. And it's like, I understand. I've gotten a tremendous amount of reader feedback on this column that posted last Friday at Cincinnati.com and ran in Sunday's print. Great responses and a lot of people agreeing that, hey, you've got to look at yourself. What are you doing? And then it starts from there. I've also had some people say, like, well, you know, it also has to do with the person in poverty, that them taking their own initiative to, you know, do something about that. I don't necessarily disagree with that. You know, there certainly are some people I think that have been enabled and probably maybe take advantage of that, and or that it's just such a generational problem that they've seen family member after family member through generations do it that way, and so that's all they know. There are also citizens who can help themselves, whether it's because of physical or emotional or problems that you need a hand up. I think that's a popular phrase in when people fighting poverty is a hand up, not a hand out. But I don't want to sit here and throw stones at people who are in poverty. I believe it's again incumbent upon all of us to try.
This isn't about the. While it is about the people, the people in poverty are everywhere. The problem is that there's a way too high a percentage and rising percentage of it here. So to me, it's systemic. We're talking about the systemic issues in this city and why we have not been able to help stem this, while other cities clearly are, or at least at a better rate. And that goes back to stuff that we are doing organizationally. So, because what would people come in and say in 10 plus years ago, look at Over the Rhine and the pile of mess that it was. It took a lot of factors, including an organization like 3CDC and things like that, really helping spearhead it. To me, right, it will take someone to organizationally put something together that can gather some momentum to create opportunities or really understand what the crux of the problem is and creating a solution or an opportunity within that. You mentioned the bus system.
Yep.
And is that the biggest player here?
I don't know if it's the biggest player, but knowing that it's such a big challenge to really wrap your arms around and I want to say this, that I'm really passionate about it. I grew up in the Appalachian area of Ohio in a very poor county. I did not grow up in a poor home, but it was the poverty was all around me at school growing up, and even I grew up literally in the country, and so on our country road there were some very poor people. And I started thinking about where do you even start. And this was just my own idea. This is my own thought, having looked at studies and having covered transportation and having heard social service agencies and people who are on the front lines of fighting poverty talk about how transportation is an issue for people who don't have a car because they're in poverty, about getting them to a job. And so this is one area I really believe the government can really address this. Especially looking back, coming back to Cincinnati here in greater Cincinnati, you have a lot of, really good entry-level types of jobs, manufacturing jobs, warehousing types of jobs that pay $15, $20 an hour. They're out in the suburbs. A lot of things out at CVG with DHL and Amazon. There's things in Mason with the Macy's call center, Sharonville. There's a big industrial park. So these are areas where if people can get to these jobs, they're going to like them and they're going to enjoy them and they're going to be able to have a good life, I think, or at least start to transition out of poverty and potentially move up in the company or build a resume to move on to something else. The problem is getting there, and the interesting thing is there's just such a breakdown because a lot of these companies have a hard time filling and retaining folks for these jobs because of the transportation issue. I'm talking a little bit anecdotally about it right now, but University of Minnesota study, 3-4 years ago, showed that the Cincinnati's Metro bus system is one of the worst systems in America for connecting people to jobs. And that's an outside study, an independent study. The SORTA themselves did their own study with UC a couple years ago, and it also it backed up what that Minnesota study said, is that they showed that it didn't have access to 75,000 jobs in the region. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And that needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed by City Hall. It needs to be addressed by Hamilton County.
Why? This is the portion of the program that we have every week where I just don't understand.
Yeah.
You're in this and but as like as average Joe here, why is this not fixed? If this is obvious, this is an obvious issue. All these jobs, is it just getting caught up in the shiny objects of other stuff, or why is this getting pushed to the side?
Well, there's a couple. The overriding issue is politics, and more specifically, is that it's not a sexy political thing to tackle something so big like this. It's a long-term game, and politicians, because of term limits or because they want to get on to the next office, are looking for those big shiny objects that they can go have a ribbon cutting, and you can get a quick, really, fun headline out of it, or so they think, and get a ride out of it on social media, and then they can use it in an ad. Well, you fixed the bus system, but it took 10 years, and you just took one step toward doing it. Well, that's kind of hard for a politician to sell for their next office. So that's part of it. Part of it has to do with city and county politics. The city of Cincinnati, City Hall, and the Hamilton County government commissioners are not on the same page. And they both appoint the Transit Authority Board, the commissioners and the mayor. And the leaders at City Hall and the leaders at the county are not on the same page about this right now. And that, with for sake of getting into the details of it, that's really, I think, at the crux of why our bus system is, sort of just the wheels are spinning in place right now.
Yeah. It's crazy to me. I mean, just because it seems like such an obvious, okay, you don't see the connection between these two stats. I mean, these two stats seem to be very closely connected. 75,000 jobs in this high rate. I mean, that's the biggest part to me. I mean, it seems and it's obviously complicated. There's obviously more stuff, but you're talking about a huge chunk of what are two deficient areas for us right now.
Very much so. And I think the government can really do very little. Like, it's not, if I go back to what we were just talking about earlier, like, I don't think it's incumbent upon the government alone to try to fix poverty.
No.
I think that, again, this is why I threw this out in the column, because I think this is addressing public transportation is a really good way, I think, for the government to address this issue. I think it, what's the company? What's DHL or Amazon? I'm not picking on them. I'm throwing out some of these companies out in the suburbs. Well, I also feel like, those companies also have a role. If they're having trouble finding good workers and getting, and transportation is a problem, which I know it is, having written about this before, I feel like it's incumbent upon those companies then to step up and say something and go to the politicians and go to the Chamber of Commerce and say, let's get together, let's try to work something out here, and let's address this issue.
Yeah, because that's the only way anything gets done. I mean, inevitably outside pressure. And I think that's where you're talking about. It comes back to you, and it comes back to you, business owner. It comes back to everybody making this something that matters to them. And probably the reason why this has happened and you're looking at numbers like this is because it's not important enough to people, right?
Yeah.
Or at least the people it's important to have not been able to get enough momentum.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think what happens is that there's no real sense of urgency, maybe, for the people who are in positions to help, in positions of power to help, or even individual people, like, live a comfortable life. I feel like I'm nice to people. I'm just generally speaking.
Yeah.
Maybe I give a few bucks to a charity, and I've done my part. Well, is that really the right approach? I mean, is that really addressing this systemic issue? Probably not. But, right, the sense of urgency, is it there from all the way around, from me as an individual to the government agencies to the business community to churches to social service agencies, all the way around? And also, is the collaboration there? I think I can easily say no, it's not.
Yeah. It's too complex for us to break down in this amount of time, but
yeah.
An interesting little look at something that is it's part of us right now. Like, those numbers, as much as we want to talk about excitement and, like you were saying, all the great things that we can discuss, and but this is also a big part of who we are right now.
For better or for worse. All right, let's, speaking of for better or for worse, City Hall is so much fun right now. Let's bring in Cherry Coolidge and talk a little bit about everything that is going on over there right now. All right, it's interview time here on the That's What Cincinnati podcast, and City Hall's a mess. City Hall is just, there's always some weird stuff going on over there, and that's why we have Sharon Coolidge to come in and try to tell us why it's a mess, what is going on. Our City Hall aficionado, Sherry, what is going on over there right now?
All right. Well, let's not use the word mess.
Mess.
Let's say it's newsy.
It's newsy.
It's newsy.
It's newsy.
I'll use the word mess.
Yeah, it's always newsy. The news is a mess. But what? There's all kinds of things. Can we run down like a checkbox of all the things that are going on right now and try to hit everything on the head? Because you've got so much going on. Make sure you're going to Cincinnati.com from the site right now, because it's just you're hitting it hard with all kinds of stuff.
Let's I mean there's so much going on. Let's try to boil it down here real quick. So if I could set Sherry up,
set it up.
Sherry is, I believe, is our best reporter, our best political reporter. She's incredibly sourced. She knows her politics as well, not just City Hall politics, but all around. And so I want to ask her a couple things about City Hall, but then I want to ask her something about generally about local politics as well, which she'll wade into as on occasion. But let's stick with City Hall. The first thing is these Gang of Five text messages. That thing continues to drag on. Can you give us where that's at and where it's going?
And what is that?
And what is it?
You know, so back in March, there was a big argument about what should happen with the now former city manager, Harry Black. You know, a group of council members, you know, really thought that he should stay, but there were some issues that maybe needed to be worked out and he could stay. And the mayor asked him to resign. And this was a big 6-week fight. In the midst of it, five council members had a text conversation among themselves, which that is a majority of council, and they're not permitted to do that. It constituted a meeting. And, you know, there was like a verbal reference to it, and then there was a reference to it in an email, and they kind of outed themselves. Yeah. And a local attorney, Brian Shry, was like, hold up. And he filed a lawsuit. And over, like, what did these texts say? The city pretty quickly was like, oof, they had a conversation. It is a meeting, and these are records. Here you go. And gave us like 10 pages of, like, they're very readable. You know, they talk about the city manager. They suggest he might have an alcohol problem. They talk about the mayor. They don't really have anything nice to say about him. Readable things. In the meantime, so that's just one conversation that we know happened. Now Ryan Tribe filed a lawsuit, and he said, well, how many times have you been doing this? And we don't know the answer to it. But, I mean, Brian Shrive contends that this has been happening from January to March until, you know, they were outed with this one conversation. And they're fighting it. They don't want those records to become public. And so that's kind of where it stands. It's in court. And, you know, they don't want the records shown to people. And Brian Shrive is insisting that they need to be. So, you know, now we're at budget committee on Monday, and here we are. The city's like, this is very complicated. You know, we represent all of you, the city solicitor, and she said, I can't. She's like, I have a conflict of interest. And she asked council, the very council members that she's defending, to approve spending on private attorneys up to $150,000.
$150,000, that which would ultimately come out of the taxpayers.
Yes.
Pocket, right?
Yes. This is, I mean, like her budget or like budgets to pay lawyers. That all is an operating budget. All these dollars flow there. Police, fire, how we're going to fund the law department. That's operating.
Why dig in here? Why not just say, you know what? These are public records. Is that what's the fight is? Is like there's a debate whether these are public records or not. So we know they violated. You know, the Ohio Supreme Court set the precedent in recent years that if you hold a quorum, a meeting, as a public official's over electronic devices, texts, emails, that constitutes a public meeting, and you have to notice it and you have to let everybody know you're doing it. Now, right now, what our big issue is why are these text messages not coming out? Is it debate over what's in them, or is the debate over whether they're public records or not?
Well, they're saying they're not necessarily public records, and since I haven't seen them, I can't make that determination myself. But the question, like, I mean, the rumors and people are saying there's a lot more embarrassing things. And there's no reason to think there aren't, because in the text messages we saw, there's plenty of embarrassing things. So that they don't want, you know what they say between themselves. Like, B.G. Sittenfeld and Chris Seelbach are friends, and they have a conversation, you know, with each other. In fact, it has been, you know, some people have been like, now you wouldn't want people to see your private text messages. But the truth of the matter is, I'm a private citizen and they're council members. So, I mean, and so at this point, you know, we're paying for lawyers to fight this court case. If this case ends up settling, which I know that a lot of people are hoping that that will do, that's costly to taxpayers. And now, I mean, this case is going to court on Tuesday, and they don't have attorneys. I mean, we left it yesterday with the city solicitor being like, yeah, we can't represent you, and city council saying, well, we're not going to pay someone to do it. And so now it heads to court. Like, what are we going to do on Tuesday? I mean, I'm expecting some answers on Tuesday at this point. This happened in March, and when I go to court on Tuesday, I'm going to find out, you know, if these text messages were meetings and possibly what they said.
Well, as Paul said, what a mess. But let's, I mean, really underneath it all or over it all or sort of all around it is the overlying issue right here, is that this kind of goes to the crux of the 2021 mayor's race, whereas, Christopher Smitherman has already announced he's going to run, a story you broke a couple weeks ago, and it's an open secret that P.G. Sittenfeld, who's kind of on the, you know, the progressive side of things, is also going to run. There's a lot of, a lot of conflict amid all this from the political standpoint that, Smitherman wants these to come out and Sittenfeld doesn't, because I think there's some thought that maybe this could ultimately maybe come back to resurface in the 2021 mayor's race.
I mean, this is the earliest I can ever remember thinking about the mayor's race ahead, but that is something that is going on. People are thinking about the headlines that stories say, you know, how they're going to be perceived in that election and what those campaigns are going to look like. And that is, everything is happening through that prism. And usually that's like at least another year away.
And 3 years and 2 months away, yeah. Folks.
Speaking of things that just seem to go on forever, I can't believe we're still talking about FC Cincinnati stadium deal. And so now the garage is like on hold. Is that mean that this whole project's going to get shut back down again? Or are we going to be back in that mess of talking about FC Cincinnati every single day for some reason? I mean, we knew there were going to be more hurdles in this, right? Like, everybody, I think, assumed that. And I think Birding and everybody, they've been very clear about that, too. But, I mean, is this a bigger one than they anticipated, this garage thing possibly being an issue?
I mean, this absolutely came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, Pat Brennan, who covers FC for us and myself, sat down with Jeff Birding about a month ago now. And he went through, you know, the land acquisition and how things were going and the stadium is being built. And he talked to us. Like, he purchased Tri-State. Well, he was working to purchase, but it seemed like kind of like a done deal at that point. The business wanted to sell to him. He was going to buy it. And that's where the county parking garage was going to go. This business has been there for 42 years in the West End. They're at Liberty and Central Streets. And it just seemed like, I mean, that's what's going on. Jeff Birding, the general manager, is going and he's buying the property he needs for the stadium, which has been approved by council. Yesterday was Development Palooza in Budget Committee. Several development deals came through yesterday. I mean, like 10, 12 deals. And this was one of them. And what we heard was that this company now was hoping to move to Lower Price Hill, to an absolute, where the Queen City Barrel fire was, EPA, like, cleanup, just absolute damaged. They've been trying to market this thing like no one's business, and everyone's like, yeah, no. Mm-hmm. We're not going to come to that spot. This company's like, here's the deal. We're going to come to, we're helping you build your FC stadium. Then can you help us move to this awful site? Like, we need a big site. We're willing to take on this horrible site. And we're going to pay $600,000 to finish the remediation that the city's never been able to do. And that's pretty much been the holdup. Because it's like, you can't say, dear company, come to my city and locate here. But, oh, by the way, you have to clean up the land for $600,000 because right. No company's doing that. But this company, you know, the theory being that they might have a little bit of extra money from FC Cincinnati, was actually going to do that. But they did ask in exchange, the city just basically give them the land for a dollar. And they saw that as very reasonable. And council was, they came up with a split vote yesterday. Like, people are like, why? I mean, Chris Seelbach, let's start with him. I mean, he said it, and he is coming from a place where I understand. Why does the city always get the raw end of the deal?
Yeah.
That was like, that's like his exact sentence. And he's sick of it, and he's been pushing this for a while. But in this case, he had the backing of, you know, half the council members, and it resonated, and they agreed, and they were like, why would we give this land away? This company seems to have the $178,000 the land is valued at. And so when it came to a vote, they were like, no, it's a split vote, and it failed. And as a result, I mean, the company said, they came into the council chambers, and they're like, unless you give us this deal, we're not moving.
Right.
Putting the whole thing in jeopardy. And granted, it's like the parking garage part of it, but let's assume that the stadium's going to need a big parking garage, and that's,
I mean,
why
that
the
was
county's
what
paying
so
for it.
So much of the fight was about what the money that was going to be given was about this garage. I mean, that was like such a big part of the whole stadium project, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so I know today for a fact that there's a lot of meetings going on, and they are trying to solve this. The mayor can bring this back into council tomorrow, even though it failed, and they're going to try and get this done. And I don't know what that looks like, because everybody left there with like a hard line. I'm not taking less than $178,000. I'm not moving if I don't get it for a dollar. Hard lines. And you know, David Mann was trying to make the case that we do land deals all the time.
Yeah.
But you know, he didn't sway anyone.
And I know we still don't have a set date yet for groundbreaking on the stadium. Any concern from FC and the people who are, you know, pushing to build the stadium? Is there any concern that this could delay the groundbreaking of the stadium, or are we at that point yet?
You know, no one from the team wanted to talk about this yesterday.
I bet.
I think they're hoping that it'll get worked out. You know, the mayor's a big champion of this project, and, you know, behind the scenes, maybe he's going to be able to get this done, you know, by tomorrow, and we're just kind of waiting to see. I think the real concern happens if this doesn't come out of council with the pass vote tomorrow. Then really what's going to happen? Because, you know, City Hall, they love to wheel and deal behind the scenes. And so yes, they maybe could get it done today.
What's going on with the Board of Elections and where are we at? This is just all kind of happened today. This was like a big breaker today.
Yeah, this came out of the blue this morning. You know, but this was a big story in July. AFTAB Puraval is running for Congress and in a very contested race that's being watched nationally. And he's the clerk in Hamilton County. And that is not something we typically, you know, care about their finances, their campaign finances. But he filed a report that was very out of the ordinary for a clerk of courts race that's not coming up for quite some time. And it raised a lot of questions. And I wrote a story about it. And, you know, you just write a story like that. Campaign finances, you ask the Board of Elections for documents, their public records, they give them to you. And we wrote a story. But in the midst of that case, and you know, Brian Shrive, here he is again. I almost wrote into the Board of Elections stories. You know him from the texting case. But I mean, Jason maybe could do that in his column. But
right.
But anyway, so he's doing the same thing I'm doing. He's very interested in this. And we're both of us at the same time were like, where's the supporting documents for these campaign finances? They kind of tell the tale. Who do we write checks to? Well, you know, what's the memo line say? And the Board of Elections is like, we don't have those. But they're like, hold up, let me see. Like, we'll just get them, which they did. And then they gave them to us, and they had a lot of redactions on them, which I was like,
is that ordinary?
No, that was a big surprise.
There's almost never redactions on things like that.
Right. I mean, because, okay, you know, they're just records, and everybody knows campaign finances. They're pretty transparent, and they're thinking about it ahead of time when they're doing it.
Basic public records, pretty basic stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, I did kind of let it go. I kind of want to see these things. Brian Shrive, however, he did not let that go. He has filed in Ohio a complaint with the Ohio Elections Commission. And that honestly has a lot to do with what is the spending in the clerk's race. There was a very expensive poll. There's out-of-state travel. There's things that you're not, photography that matches up to when he kicked off his congressional campaign, like things that are like, they raised some eyebrows, and Brian he wanted to know more, and so he filed this complaint. And in fact, I'm planning on, you know, kind of following how this complaint goes. In the midst of that, everybody has to kind of file paperwork saying what they know and what they don't know, kind of almost like a court case, but not exactly. And AFTAB's campaign says, we didn't redact those records. And the Board of Elections said, we didn't redact those records.
So who did?
There is an they called an emergency meeting tomorrow to discuss exactly what happened to these records and how they got redacted. And it is a very serious deal. I cannot remember them calling an emergency meeting in which they're saying they are going to question employees about what happened. I mean, if these records were altered, and I'm not saying they are, I'll be there tomorrow at 11 and I'll be tweeting at Sharon Coolidge. But you can't alter records like that coming out of the Board of Elections. This would be a very serious.
What's the fallout if, what's the fallout for whatever the answer could be? I mean, is this going to affect that race potentially?
Well, I mean, Jason, I think Jason could talk more about like when we write stories and how the campaigns use them. They don't always use them exactly as things are written because in this case, at this point, it's seeming like whatever is going on with his campaign finances, we don't know yet. That's going to be vetted by the Elections Commission. This is a separate issue.
Yeah.
His name is mentioned in it, but you know, he doesn't seem like this investigation is about something he did related to those records.
Yeah.
My take on this is that I don't think campaign finance issues resonate generally with voters. I do think they're important because it can give you a glimpse into, as a normal everyday voter, it can give you a glimpse into how is this person while in elected office going to handle my money. And so that's why I believe that's sort of the overlying issue is that's why these are important stories. And, you know, it's always about following the money and who's, you know, helping who and, you know, then what happens when they get in office, what deals are they making? But this sounds like potentially, again, let me back up to the original complaint. There are questionable things there. Sherry said, ultimately, you know, probably the worst case scenario is maybe AFTAB's campaign or AFTAB gets a fine. I'm just guessing on that. And it probably isn't that big a deal. Now, though, this is becoming a probably potentially a big story that could be used in this campaign because, you know, as AFTAB, whether he had anything to do with it or not, and Steve Chabot is a seasoned campaigner and he likes to go hard at his opponent.
We've seen that already.
Yes, we have.
It's already dirty.
And you could see them raising the question at least or throwing this out there, did AFTAB order this person in the Board of Elections to do this?
Did you order the code red?
Exactly.
It's exactly what it is.
And so, and I'm not saying, I have no idea. I'm not saying anything about that.
It's just like the text. It's rampant speculation, and you can't stop that.
Yeah. And that is really your life. We're really just a glimpse, rampant speculation, trying to figure out what is real and what is speculation.
Is it only, Tuesday, right?
We're just getting started.
I want to make clear that, we're talking about, when we say tomorrow, our podcast goes up Tuesday night.
On Tuesday,
a lot of you are going to be listening Wednesday morning. Later Wednesday morning, is that 11:30?
At 11.
So 11 o'clock is when the Board of Elections is calling.
This may have already happened. So if you're listening to this thing, I wonder what the fallout was. Go to Cincinnati.com, follow Sherry at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter, or obviously Jason. We'll be all over this. So make sure you just pop back on and see what the fallout is on all the stuff, which there is always more. And then find out what the new stuff that happens is, because there's always something new that pops up. Sherry's all over it. Sherry, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thanks for having me.
See, we'll have you back soon when more stuff happens, which is inevitable.
Means we'll have you back next week. So
yeah.
Thanks, Sherry.
All right. Much thanks to Sherry for joining us. And just exhausting.
Exhausting, but I'll tell you what,
I don't know how she does it.
I tell her that all the time. We sit in the same little pod here in the office, and but she's amazing, and she sets the tone on our journalism here, and it really is amazing.
Yeah, no doubt. There's always something happening over there. All right, it's time for our That's So Cincinnati moment. What to you this week was so Cincinnati, Jason?
Well, it's so Cincinnati to me, but it is dinner and Blanc.
Oh, you hate it so much.
That's your words, not mine.
You don't seem to be a big fan.
No, I'm not a big fan.
People,
I love the hate on it. You do. It's not. It's technically apparent. It's not a Cincinnati specific thing. Apparently, they do this in other cities across the country. But if you don't know what dinner en blanc is, what I know of it, I've never been and never will go, and that's a guarantee. I will never go ever.
So you're just the type to just rip on something even though you've never done it, because that's kind of so
sincere. Well, we have a certain coworker that may or may not have been on our podcast today who loves it and goes all the time every year. But the gist of dinner en blanc, do I need to go into that?
Just briefly, go ahead and sum it up.
You have to wear all white, and unless they'll kick you out.
Isn't it in a secret location?
It's in a secret location. Someone puts it together, secret location. You've got to bring your own food. You've got to bring your own table, your own chairs, your own utensils, plates, drinks, food, everything. And you have to go out and buy this outfit, because I don't think, you know, at least I don't. I don't have a white dress pants, and I have a white dress shirt, or a white sport coat, or, you know, or white, I guess, dress shoes. I don't know. You can wear white sneakers. You can wear white. You just have to wear white.
All this just so that everyone will be in white in the same place?
Yeah. And then they pick somewhere around the city, and they set up these tables in the middle of a park, or I think this year it was on the riverfront, and just people eat dinner that they've brought. So like a picnic dinner. Like there's no caterer there.
No caterer.
And I believe you also have to pay to go do this as well.
This seems stupid.
Well,
some people like it, I guess.
But to me, it's my so Cincinnati moment of the week, because it just is.
It just is. It's a thing, and you will not like it for as long as it exists. As long as it exists. The concept of going out and buying white shoes so that I can go have a picnic in the park seems to rub me the wrong way a little bit. But, I mean, it's fine. I'm sure it's lovely.
I don't want to be negative, but...
No, but why?
I want to be honest. Okay.
No, I want you to be yourself, and you're kind of a negative curmudgeon.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Totally miscast.
What's your so sensitive? Wait, hang on. Are you ready for? Okay.
I'm ready. We really, like, at this point, we're going to just have to bring in the Christmas Vacation sounder for that. I mean, because it's just such a poorly done drum roll.
Might have to ask Burl what his suggestion might be.
To me, my That's So Cincinnati moment, and it's something that I live and bathe in, unfortunately, and that is after the Bengals got their win to go to 2-0, I came up from the locker room, and I open up Twitter, and it doesn't matter. Marvin's going to suck and screw us anyway. They're going to lose in the playoffs. You just can't. Just for a second. Just be like, oh, 2-0. They won a primetime game. They never do that. Like, the quarterback played really good. And hey, you know, this is kind of fun winning, and they haven't won in a while. No, it's just, no, screw it. Marvin still sucks. They're still doomed as long as he's there. Now, that wasn't everyone, but it was like one of the first few messages I saw. And I just thought, that's so Cincinnati.
God, just really don't like them. That is so Cincinnati.
It really is.
Oh, but, go ahead.
But no, I also on top of that, I wanted to bring up. I wanted it to be a regular segment too, which is I update everyone on the repaving of my street that was my so Cincinnati moment last week, which is still ongoing. This Carmageddon 2018 is
the street that has two dead ends.
The street that has no outlet both ways. There's an entry point.
I know.
It bothers you. So update, no signs. No sign of a worker, no signs of signs. Like, this whole thing was such a big deal for like 2 weeks. Move your cars every day, and now they might have just said, nah, forget it. Like, just screw it. I really am sure that we're getting punked. Like, this is all part of like some, you know, some show. How much would I be dating myself if I made like an Ashton Kutcher punked reference?
Well, you call me a curmudgeon, so that means you wouldn't be dating yourself punked? For me, apparently.
No,
because
no, you're older than me. It's true.
But we have the masses out there listening, so I think you would be dating yourself.
A little bit, but I mean...
But go for it.
I'm just saying, that's the first of those types of shows that they would do that to me.
Oh, okay.
You know?
I got one quick thing I want to... a little rewind here.
Yeah, rewind.
You said, this is something that I do and I bathe in every day, talking about the Bengals.
Bathe in Bengals negativity.
Oh, and Bengals negativity.
When I go into Twitter, at any point, I'm bathing in Bengals negativity.
Oh, man. You really are.
I'm drowning. It's just, the water's so dirty.
Okay.
It's just... Of course, I don't take baths because I don't like sitting in my own filth, but that's why I think of that when I think about going wading into Twitter anytime talking about the Bengals. It's just, there's just a lot. There's a lot of pent-up frustration that people have, even at 2-0. Even at 2-0.
We're heading down a path here of me referencing the old editor bathroom early in the show.
And me talking about my bathing habits.
Now, current editor's bathroom, which I have not used since an editor has occupied.
This is all unfortunate.
It really is. Let's get out of this.
I think we should end that. All right. Remember, subscribe, comment, tell your friends, all those things about how much you enjoy this or anything that you want us to do or do differently or talk about, and we will do that for you. So we'll talk to you next week on That's What's Insane.